historical records. I'm not quite sure where you got it from.
All on the internet.
Yeah.
It was everything I could find about you.
Was there anything on there you got me about in the internet?
Heaps.
I haven't done anything wrong.
No, it was all good. All about you and Scotch. And then there were also things about some of the companies you'd worked with and it was great. It's really, really good.
Mm. I thought we might use it as a bit of a prompt to go through and ask some questions and get you to ramble on and respond.
Yeah.
Candice, you need to say a few other things before we start.
Sure, of course. So, Sir Archie, what we're wanting to do with the interview is use this interview and then write an article on it that we can put on the web for the 150th.
Right.
So we want to use the interview and write an article that we can put on the internet for the 150th anniversary. And there's some paperwork that I need to go through with you, a consent form and things like that for you to sign.
Yeah.
I didn't bring it with me though. So what I'd like to do is do the interview right now, and then if I can post you those documents, and until you've signed those documents, the we won't do anything with the interview at all until you're happy with all of that.
Yeah, right.
If that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Great.
And then we'd get your permission to do any publishing that was what we thought was relevant. I don't know whether you see that... a supplement that comes out in The Age sometimes of University Voice. It's about a four...
Four-page. Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's a possible vehicle where we might have an article about your association and observations about Melbourne University.
Yeah.
But before we did that, it would be checked to get your approval.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that'd be all right.
Well, you've got to be very careful of these university people.
Well, that's very sensibly too. Too many people open their mouth widely. You hear that on around election time.
Yeah.
Yes, you do. Definitely.
So this is all totally sub judice until you give your approval. We've got a bit more information you've given us here, but just to get it on the record, could we start now?
Yeah, go for it. We're all hooked up.
It's running out.
Mm, the little one is.
You're going to ask me questions, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. And then we'll just chat.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, first of all, you were born in Sale, in Gippsland. What was the family background there, Archie? Was it
farming?
Farming.
My grandfather came from Northern Ireland, he and his wife, and they came to Melbourne and heard about the settlements in Gippsland, so they went by steamer around to Port Albert, and then by bullock wagon over to Sale, which is just being settled, and took up land there on Lake Wellington.
Oh. And that wouldn't have been too far from the university property, Strathfield, say, that...
Not far from there. Yeah.
Nice.
And what was I going to say? That was in the year 1917. No. I was born in 1911. And he died, my grandfather died, just after I was born. So between two of us, he was born in 1830. And between the two of us, we've spent from 1830 till now.
Mm.
I didn't even know him, of course.
Right.
But it makes you realise how short history is.
Mm.
For Australia.
That's what's that, 180 years.
Yeah.
It's a long time, just two people.
So, was that sheep or cattle at that time?
Oh, it was dairying.
Mm.
Dairying
farming. Well, hard work.
Mixed farming. Oh, it was hard work. And the property he selected wasn't all that good.
Mm.
But they managed to rear 12 children. And my father was one of 12.
But he went and did farming there as well?
He and his brother, they bought some land where I lived, Pine Park, and his brother had the place next door. So that's where I lived until I went away to school and when I was 15.
You would have had a bit of background in hard work around the farm.
Oh, I learned to milk cows when I was 4. You know, it was rough. It was tough work.
Mm.
And you'd be relying upon horses mainly for transport?
Yeah. I've got a picture. If you can pull that picture down and see some of our horses.
Wow.
That's on the front lawn.
Fine looking horses.
Pine Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were beautiful horses.
Wow.
So, you would have been also involved with fencing and all that sort of thing?
Fencing, yeah. Chasing cockatoos off the newly planted fields.
White cockatoos are still very prolific down there.
Oh.
I went to Strathfield, say, a few years ago, and the noise they make in the mornings. Okay, so you went off to school, a boarder.
The reason I left the Sale High School, but you know, it was right at the heart of the Depression, and we hadn't thought of me going away to boarding school, but they didn't have a mathematics master at Sale High School for that year, and Mother was very keen on education, and she immediately came down to Melbourne and went around and interviewed all the headmasters. And she decided that Scotch was the best. She fell in love with Dr. Littlejohn, I think. You know, he was a wonderful man.
Mm.
And I was too late to get in at the border, and I went to board at Miss Murray's, which Crawford mentioned in his speech. And there was an overflow of Scotch boys living there. She was a wonderful person. She was a sister of the Murrays that ran Mount Lyle.
Oh, yes.
You know, and she looked after us wonderfully well.
But and your mother was really determined you should get a good education and a wide education. A wide...
Wide education, yeah.
But she insisted upon mathematics.
Oh, that was the first thing that was had to be a good mathematics degree.
Why did she recognise that? Did she have that academic background?
No, she didn't. But she talked to Dr. Littlejohn about it. Frank Ross was the head, was the mathematics master, and his brother was in my mathematics class at the Ross, and he became the statistician, or what do you call it, for the AMP Society. So he was a brilliant mathematician too.
And the teaching of mathematics was good at Scotch?
Oh, it was really good. Ian McClendon was in my class, and Ross, and Peter Wickens, whose father was the statistician in Canberra. They were pretty tough bunch to
do. So you're already close to Sir Ian.
Yeah.
But he was interested in the science and mathematics as well.
Yeah. Yes, he was dux of the school, and then I stayed on a year longer, and that's when I became 17 and I was old enough to stand on my own feet. And I managed to get a federal scholarship, or a state scholarship.
Well, they were pretty rare in those days.
They were rare. And
so.
He died a little while ago. I think of his
love. Name. Love, was it? No.
Love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a nice man.
Yeah.
So what was his relationship with Scotch? He was
in the same class.
Was he?
Yeah. He got a senior scholarship at the same time.
Well, he taught me mathematics, and he was the best mathematics teacher I ever had.
Yeah.
He was so logical.
Yeah.
He just...
He never taught me because I was contemporary. But it was Tom Cherry.
Yes.
He was
another good teacher, but not as meticulous as Love.
He wasn't a good teacher. Yeah. He couldn't hear what... He used to stand with his back to you when he was on the blackboard.
Right.
You know, he would never be trained as a teacher. No. But he was a very nice fellow.
I don't think Love was ever been trained, but he just knew how to get something across and explain it.
Yeah.
Now, Ian McLennan went straight on to university to study engineering.
Yeah.
He'd made up his mind well before he graduated from Scotch.
Yeah.
But you hadn't made up your mind until Monash said this is the language of
the engineer.
I hope I
picked up a bit of the language. Yeah. One, two, illiterate.
Well, do you still reckon that mathematics is the language?
Of course it is. You know, without mathematics, an engineer would be absolutely lost.
And when you got to university, did you find that their version of mathematics was what you hoped for?
Well, it was different. Well, university, when you leave school, you move into a different world altogether. You're on your own.
Mm.
It's not like school where you're looked after.
Mm. It's not such a big jump as now as it was then. The university was pretty tough on passing and failing people in those days, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Are they any better now?
I think they are. They give you a bit more opportunity to come good. The pass rates are generally much better than they were in even my day.
Yeah.
I remember sitting down first year and some lecturer saying, well, look to your left, look to your right, and only two of those three are going to graduate. I hope we're doing a bit better now.
I remember the sort of thing you'd never have to do nowadays. We had to do the stresses in a steel frame building 7 stories high. And we had to work with 10 figure logarithms. And you got to, I think it was a 7 simultaneous equation you had, and you had to solve those. And I remember working all the school holidays, all the university holidays on that sort of thing. Did you do it today with a computer?
Yeah.
You wouldn't.
But we did a lot of that with slide rules as well, because it didn't really need that amount of accuracy for engineering. You would have been in the days when all the drawings were meticulously done in the drawing office.
Yeah.
You drew every bolt and every rivet. You remember the drawing office? Don't have that now. They all sit in front of a screen and they use computer-aided drafting. But I always felt that the drawing that you did was very important of visualization.
Yeah.
So you would have had 4 years.
Yeah.
And you got onto... strength of materials and things like that.
Yes, my partner Norman and I got the exhibition in strength and elasticity of materials. And old Professor Payne taught it.
Payne was there for a long while, wasn't he?
Yeah. It's not long after I graduated, I think. There was, who was the other elderly professor? Payne, hadn't just Payne? Oh, well known name in the engineering school.
After Payne, there was.
He was before. Well, he's really a contemporary of Payne.
There was Rennie, who was in mechanical engineering. You didn't have the migrants, the Germans like Laszlo or Brash.
Yeah.
They were mainly English trained people.
Yeah.
What was the subject you most disliked in your engineering degree?
Funny thing, it was surveying. I never took much of surveying, but it scrambled through. And it didn't. The life of a surveyor didn't appeal to me.
No. It's again, we had to use then seven bigger log tables.
Yeah.
And doing astronomy.
Yeah.
Always seemed a bit unnecessary for a civil engineer.
Yeah. And the other thing, a lot of empirical rules that you applied to. Adjusting your theodolites and so on. This was too empirical.
Sexton was around. He taught
yeah.
Hydraulics.
Yeah.
He would have taught you as well.
Yeah.
He was a very knowledgeable man. He was very quiet.
Yes, he was.
And almost very nervous.
Yeah.
Teaching.
But he was respected.
He was good, yeah.
He was respected.
I always felt he didn't get the recognition he needed, he deserved.
No.
So drawing was a pretty big part of it, of your course.
Started off with a chap from British Trade and Tobacco Company, who was the first year taught graphics. And he taught us a lot of first year subjects. He was very good too.
You did work in steel design. What about reinforced concrete?
Yes, we did quite a lot of that.
They weren't building frame structures in reinforced concrete at that time, were they? They were
no.
Mainly the slabs, floor slabs.
That's right. Yeah.
And we still had a lot of timber floors. The old engineering building is mostly timber floored, the old part. And you would have been down in the heat engines lab where they had those old steam engines.
Yeah.
Well, there was a one that
they still got them.
No, I don't know what happened to them. It was a great big single acting steam engine with all sorts of cycles you could put onto it.
Yeah,
that was good fun, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Some of those engines have come from Ronaldson Brothers and Tippetts.
Yeah,
from Ballarat.
Yeah,
that's where I did my first year. Experience in working in the foundry there, which I quite enjoyed.
That would have been very good basic
training. Old Mr. Ronaldson, he was a very nice man. He knew everyone in the works and he used to come around and see how we were getting on with our preparation of the moulds for the thing.
Well, you would have also got to know the attitudes of workmen.
Yeah.
That was probably when the union movement wasn't as strong as it was later.
No.
But you were seeing it at that factory level.
Yeah. But I wasn't aware of the unions really. They didn't rear their heads very much in the Ronaldson's. I'm not sure they're still going. I don't think they would be.
A lot of those smaller companies up around Ballarat and Bendigo that were first-rate engineering companies have folded. Was there any management in the course that you took with engineering?
Not much. We had preparation of contracts and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't...
What about the financial side, the costings and...
Just in a minor way. It wasn't a major subject. It's a pity.
Your experience in management and in finance had to come later. You went and worked for a while after you graduated. After you graduated, you worked for a while?
Carbon Dry Ice.
Yeah.
Jeff Grimwade. I literally walked the streets looking for a job, as you can imagine that. Yeah. And, it was always the same. They'd say, oh, come back later, we might have something. There's nothing. The only one that said that to me that did come back later, that was BHP. By that time, Jeff Grimwade had offered me a job at Carver Dry Ice, and I said, there's no way I'm going to let him down because he gave me a job when I needed it most. So I stayed there about 2 years, and I kept up my rowing in those days. And one of the other people that was rowing at the University Boat Club was Wilson. His brother was head of APM.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I forgot his Christian name now, but he rowed for Cambridge, and he said to me when we were rowing, he said, "Have you ever thought of joining ICI?" I said, "I've never heard of it." I hadn't been long forward at that stage because he joined in London and came out here to work. And he said, "I'll fix up an appointment with you." I went along to see Norman Taylor, who was the managing director or technical director, I think it was then. And he said, "I'm going out to Deer Park on Monday morning and I'll give you a lift." And on the way out in the car, I taught him how to take his waistcoat off without taking his coat off. I think it got me the job.
That's lovely. Could you still do it?
Oh, yes. I don't. The problem is I don't wear a waistcoat.
So, what did you do at ICI? What's the first job they gave you?
As maintenance engineer at the explosives.
Maintaining machinery or?
Yeah, maintaining, the whole of the exploded area. There weren't many people around at that stage we worked with. And Bainbridge was my predecessor. And he was leaving to go somewhere else, I've forgotten. And I got pitchforked into this job when I was almost fresh from carbon dry ice. I remember the foreman saying to me, later on when I got to know them all better, they said they thought you were quite old. And I was only 24, I think. And I had a moustache, which made me look a bit old. So they were very nice to me. They helped me. Those foremen were really top men.
There weren't many other engineers there, though. Qualified people, though. So they were relying upon the foreman, who probably knew as much about it as you did, or more. So that led into other positions in ICI.
Yeah. Well, of course, with the war approaching, Norman Taylor, who I'd taught to take his waistcoat off without taking his coat off, became managing director, he and old Sir Lennon Rawls.
Mm-hmm.
And when the war came, or I'd had very, we were building factories. We built the Alkali Works in Adelaide, and we built a number of fairly big works.
And Botany as well, he would have been.
Botany
was a big ICI place, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's right. Len Wycart was involved with Botany quite a lot. And then a lot of these were semi wartime projects. And when war broke out, I had a commission in the engineers, and I was due to be called up, and they pulled me out of the army because of my explosive experience and factory building experience. So that's why I didn't ever get away with the arms. I was always sorry I didn't, you know. You feel a sense of loss when your friends have all gone and you're left behind. But I had no choice, I was told.
What you were doing with explosives was probably almost as dangerous as being out there in the front line. They had a few explosives, didn't they, out there, Park?
Yeah.
A few problems there.
We built the factory opposite the Park. We built a cordite and a TNT plant. And we built a poison gas plant, which wasn't for poison gas, but was an intermediate product in making certain other chemicals. But I always think if that gas ever gets out, it'll be hell to pay.
So there were quite a few engineers working in that area by this time. And
yeah.
So it had changed from when you first went there, when you were almost the sole.
That's right.
Engineer.
Oh, it expanded very materially.
You worked your way up in the technical side, but also into the managerial side.
Yeah. I was working under Ethington Lewis in the munitions department, and all the major requisitions had to go through for his signature, and we became great friends.
Was he an engineer?
Yes, I think so.
I don't recall him very much. I knew him from when he was in, by reputation, he was in BHP, but I don't know where he graduated. We must chase that up.
Adelaide, I think.
Yeah.
He lived in Adelaide.
Well,
his father was an explorer.
Yeah. That's right. That's why it's called Essington. Because he lived up on Port Essington in northwestern Australia. I think he was born in Port Essington in Northern Territory.
Yeah.
Up on Arnhem Land. So you finished the war and you went to...
I was overseas.
You went to Harvard and London.
I went to London and then I was seconded to DuPont in America for the last year. And I worked with them.
So you were, you were working there rather than studying there?
I was studying all their methods and so on. Because ICI had an agreement with DuPont, technical agreement, to exchange views on technology. So I had all the benefit of that.
And
that was wonderful.
Both technical and managerial, would it?
Oh, it was. Yeah.
And by that time you must have been getting concerned about financial management.
Yes.
Is that where you got your experience?
Yes, I did. In ICI I had quite a lot of experience on that side.
But you learnt on the job, did you?
Yeah.
Do you think we ought to be doing something much more intensive in undergraduate training in that area?
you just picked up as you went along, even, you know, you had to manage major projects, you had to know what you were doing.
Make some mistakes?
I suppose the mistakes were more obvious to my successors than they were to me.
But it's quite remarkable that people were doing that without formal training in finance at that time, or economics.
Yeah.
I've always been amazed at how successful they were.
Yeah.
Ian McLennan is another great example of that.
Yeah.
But he recognised, or he promoted the idea of more intensive management.
Yeah.
After you left Melbourne University, you had no more formal training of any sort of higher education?
Except Harvard.
Harvard. You went to Harvard to do what?
I went to Harvard in 1857.
This is after you'd been to DuPont?
Yeah. This was after the war. I was then technical director of ICI, and I went over there sponsored by the company to go through the Harvard course, which was a wonderful experience.
And what was the course you did there? That was the
Advanced Management course.
Advanced Management. You got a degree out of it, or?
Well, you got what they call an AMP diploma.
How long did that take?
That was 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fairly intensive.
Yes, it was. And you were up against the pick of the people around the world they came from, mostly from the States, but from England, Europe, Italy, places like that.
But they're all experienced people.
They're all experienced.
You were 57, you were 46.
Yeah.
You weren't there like a callow undergraduate.
No.
A bit like the executive MBA they run at Melbourne now, related to that.
Yeah. It's a wonderful experience because, you know, when you're up against competition, really, each class consists of about 100 people, and the professor used to fire questions, and you'd have to answer, there's no getting out of it. And if you came up with something foolish, one of the other students would call out, "That's a lot of crap," you know, just to encourage you. So you had to be careful what you said.
So you worked in syndicates there, did you?
Yeah, what they called Ken groups.
Oh.
And about 8 of us in a Ken that were closely associated, where we were living in the college as well.
It was all about teamwork.
Yeah.
But very much a competition within the team.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good style of
I think
education?
I got a lot out of it in afterlife. I made a lot of years of it.
Yes, we try to organise undergraduate students into teams for design work. And most of them enjoy it. There are a few who are never able to work in a team.
Yeah.
And that's essential if you're going to be in management, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you recommend people going and doing intensive courses like that when they're preparing for a new career track?
And later promotion. Yeah.
So that was when you were technical director of ICI?
Yeah.
And you came back and you became
managing director.
That's a pretty big jump.
Yes.
That must have been about the time that ICI built its new building, was it?
Yeah.
They constructed their headquarters building.
That is a bit earlier than that. Because I remember when I came back from living in Europe, in London, Ken Begg had
Batesmart and McCutcheon were the engineers.
Batesmart and McCutcheon, yeah.
It's still a fine-looking building.
It is a very good building, very comfortable building.
I did a bit of work with the engineer, Brown, on testing some of the steel connections. And also I abseiled down the outside of the building when the glass was falling off. Were you in the building when the glass was all collapsing?
Yeah.
The glass panes on OCI had a fault in the glass manufacture, and they, after a few years, was magnesium sulfate or something? The inclusion, there was a...
Nickel sulfide.
When the
glass was in the furnace, some of the furnaces, the linings should have been replaced a bit earlier than they were.
Yeah.
And they were spalling off and getting into the glass, and we got some of this German glass. It took us a long time to find that out.
It took a while for these to start failing, though. This nickel sulfide apparently changed its form over a year or two.
Yeah, with the sunshine on it, it used to swell and broke the glass.
These great sheets of glass falling down.
They used to explode.
Wow.
But they had great shelters written all along the footpath.
And I'll tell you, one of the things that really caused some alarm is when one of them spalled off and hit a tram out in the street and hit the leg of the Labour minister. I forgot his name now. But that really started a lot of protest.
Was it a politician that it hit?
Oh. You could be unlucky in that.
Wow.
It's like I was called him because there was some suggestion that it was sway of the building that was causing it, and I said no, it wasn't. And they insisted I abseil down the outside of the building, expecting these glass panels to see.
You did that, did you?
Yeah. My wife never forgave me. It was great fun.
Where was the building?
It's on the corner of Nicholson Street and Albert Street.
What's the one with the tram in it?
Yeah. The north end of. Not far from
Spring
Parliament House.
Right.
Spring, yeah.
Almost Spring,
yeah. Mm. So that was an interesting time for you. And after that, where did you go to with your work? Then your various directorships on banks and things? Mm. The bank? Which bank was it?
Westpac. Bank of New South Wales, it was. When I joined.
Well, I must have thought you had some financial skills.
You can make mistakes, can't you? Mm. No, I enjoyed that.
But that was helped by your time at Harvard.
Yeah. Yeah. And I learned a lot from the bank too. And I've always, how I first became a friend of the banks was when I wanted to get married and I wanted an overdraft, and I went to the Bank of Australasia, as it was then, and they turned me down. I only wanted £500, and I said to hell with you, I'll go down the street to Bank of New South Wales, not knowing whether they'd turn me down too. But when I went there, they said, certainly, how much do you want? And I've always said, you're the bank for me. Mm. And I've been true to them, and all my family bank with them.
Mm.
And a lot of our associated companies, they've all been true to the bank. Mm.
So you were director of the bank for how long? From 67 to 84. It's quite a long while.
Yeah.
Tell me, I've got something from 1970 to 78, chairman of IMI Australia. What's IMI?
Imperial Metal Industries.
Oh.
It was a part of ICI. It was one of the branches of ICI, which it was called the Metals Division, first of all, and then they decided they wanted to get out of metals because it didn't fit the chemical industry, they sold it. And they had a branch here in Australia, which I represented them on, amongst other books.
That doesn't still exist, though, in any form? That company doesn't exist in any form?
Yes, it does.
As what? IMI?
It's in the Midlands in Birmingham.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't think they've... They don't have any manufacturing operation here, but they export.
What sort of metals did they specialise in?
Copper.
Oh, yeah.
Copper is the main thing.
There's reference somewhere to a paper you awarded a special paper meeting IET Australia convened for the purpose of hearing your James N. Kirby paper.
Yeah.
What was that about?
The Institute of Production Engineers, and they awarded me the Kirby Award for the year, and they presented me with they've got the little award thing here somewhere.
That was a technical...
Nice little plaque.
A technical paper or...
Technical paper on engineering industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does a copy of that paper still exist?
Look, I don't know. I could probably dig it out with a bit of... I've got so much...
I know what it's like.
Oh, dear.
You would have... In ICR at that time, there was one of the Hamer brothers, wasn't there?
Yes. Alan.
Was he the... One had been in the Navy, or...?
No, that was his brother, was the naval man.
Yeah.
He became a Member of Parliament.
That's right. Well,
and then Dick was the Premier.
Yeah.
And Alan was a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah. And the one in ICI was... What's his name?
Alan.
Yeah. And he was an engineer, or a chemical engineer?
Chemical engineer.
Another one, John Campbell. A.J. Campbell, he was around at that time in ICI, mostly at botany, I think, in production.
Yes, I don't remember him very well.
Yeah. Okay, well, we might try to chase up that James N. Kirby paper.
Definitely.
And then you went back to university, didn't you, at a top level, La Trobe.
Yeah. Well, I was on the council for Monash. The early council to set the thing up, and then when they formed a council, I dropped off. And then when the Trobe was contemplated, Henry Bolte asked me if I'd take it on.
You were persuaded to go into that because of your experience with Monash.
Yeah.
When you would have been there when Matheson was appointed as Vice-Chancellor
at
Monash.
Monash, yeah.
That's one of the greatest moves you ever made.
Yeah.
He was a great Vice-Chancellor.
Very nice man, too.
And, yeah, he taught me in the final year before he went back to Manchester. Manchester.
Is he still alive?
No.
His wife is, I think.
Yes, she's still alive.
Yeah.
He died about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He's
a very nice man.
Oh, he's a lovely man and so talented. He was almost a Renaissance man with music and his engineering.
Yeah.
But he did a great job for engineering at Monash.
Yeah.
But also for the University at Monash.
Yeah.
So, La Trobe, you went there as the first Vice-Chancellor?
Yes, I was chairman of the committee that was formed, first of all. We had to look for a site and appoint staff and do all those things. And all that preliminary work had been done and the university was about to start, chairman, and then I was knighted for that.
Did you have much actual contact with the direction La Trobe took, which initially didn't include engineering?
No. No, well, we were limited with what we could do by the money available.
Yeah. Well, they've done well.
They have done well. As a matter of fact, I've just been out there on a tour with the Vice Chancellor. He invited me out and sent a car for me and had a lovely day with him.
Oh, nice.
And we just had the two of us had lunch together and chatted. And he was so nice about it. And he came from the London School of Economics.
Mm. I think he's one of the better ones you've had recently. The one that went from Melbourne there didn't do too much for us. Osborne.
Yeah.
But this one looks to be doing a good job.
Yeah.
And they are finding their niche. What do you reckon was your most satisfying achievement in all this long career in engineering and management and universities management? Must have a highlight which you really treasure.
Well, I suppose my later years in RCI, I really enjoyed, and my number two was Thomas Swanson. You may have heard of Tom.
Yes, yeah.
A wonderful man. You couldn't have met a more honest and capable man than Tom. He came from the Adelaide originally, or he was born in Broken Hill, but he then went to the university up in New South Wales, just north of Sydney. And we recruited him from there, so he came into RCI at a late stage. But I think, you know, you like to work with pleasant people, and he was one of them.
RCI must have been quite a happy place then.
It was. It was.
And they were successful in their business operation too.
Yeah.
That was before they broke off from the UK branch, wasn't it? They were still part of...
Split into all the organics, went into the new company, and then the non-organics went into the tail. the organic side, which is dyestuffs and pharmaceuticals, all that side, that's absolutely boomed. They formed a joint company with AXA, and it's AXA with the new RTI name, AXA, something or other. And that's been very successful, but the other side was badly managed. They got work-study people, you know, people who weren't true academically in there. And
that's something you'd advise against. You'd advise against doing that.
Yes, it did. RCI didn't prosper other than they sold out to the Dutch company, what's it called, AKA or something.
And that was well after your time.
Yeah.
Now, that's the highlight, and that reflects you. You really grew up from the technical side to the management side in that one company, so you knew it from right down at the vats where they were making the material to right the top floor.
Yes, and then I joined the board of RCI in London and had 5 years with them.
But were they impressive?
Very, very impressive. It was just after that that when they hit on the idea of splitting the company into two. That was the greatest mistake they ever made. Oh, but I was no longer on the board then. two bits are easier to take over.
Yeah. I thought they would have been doing the taking over.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, stupid. They just got a thing about it.
Okay, one last question. If you were at a prize giving and some young student came up and you say, what are you going to do? And he said, didn't know. Would you encourage them for engineering?
I certainly would, yeah.
But what would you expect them to be good at before you encourage them?
Well, I think they have to have a feeling for humanity. I think whatever you do, unless you've got that, life's not going to be a pleasant for you.
Yeah.
Mm. And how did you find you were able to contribute to that through the work you did in engineering?
Well, I don't know. I suppose I had a feeling for mankind, you know. I played a lot of sport. And always enjoyed it. And I think I was reasonably popular, and you don't want to kid yourself. But I went out of my way to be kind to people.
I think it often comes from people growing up in the country too, that have that,
yes,
that relationship to the land and to other people.
Yes, exactly.
I remember some of my colleagues, one of them in particular, always promoted this idea that because he came from the country, he was much better able to relate to other people. I'm not sure this is true, but it's an attitude. You have to have that liking for people and trusting,
yeah,
of people.
Yeah.
I've normalised this conversation. I'm sorry.
No,
when
that's completely
off,
fine.
When I was five, I went to the little local school. And Miss Orr was the teacher, and she was the most wonderful person. And I remember for my birthday party, I sat on her knee. This is the headmistress, who only 15 of us in the class.
Which school was that?
Little Harter State School, it was called.
Harter?
It was out of the country,
Near Lake Wellington.
Out in that direction. We didn't live near not close to Lake Wellington, where we were.
Is that
Pine
still,
Park.
Does it still exist, that village or town?
Our old house, the property's been sold off, but the old house is still there, and Sue and I went to visit it, but it was pretty. All the avenue of pine trees had been cut down, the farm had been sold, and there was an electric linesman who was renting the house. But he was a very nice man. He showed us all over the house. My old bedroom was in the kitchen.
Mm.
What about the school? Is that still there? The school house?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. I don't think there would be.
It says one of these things that you used to go to Sunday school on a pony.
I rode from Pine Park into Sale, which is about 3.5 miles. I rode to, he said there to Sunday school, but I rode to Audrey High School.
Right.
Look, as I was saying, I've been monopolising it.
No,
it's
completely. That's why we had you come
so
and do this.
So interesting to hear, actually reminiscing and miming. I'll relate to things a bit later, but in many cases contemporary.
Mm.
You must have other questions.
Sure, yes. I was wondering, Sir Archie, in your opinion, what you would see some of the greatest breakthroughs in engineering have been over the years.
The greatest engineering project?
Well, yeah, or breakthroughs or advances.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sydney Harbour Bridge was a great achievement when
right.
I was at university. And I remember we rode in Sydney and the bridge was about to come together.
Yeah, pretty brave, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. It was a great project. Snowy Mountain Scheme, wonderful project.
And what did you do there? Or how did, what did happen there with that scheme?
That was feeding all the rivers into dams and the hydroelectric power and using the water for irrigation as well.
The industrialisation of Australia occurred remarkably quickly, didn't it? Driven by the war.
Yeah.
Yes, we were making aeroplanes by the end of the war.
Yeah.
That was a remarkable achievement, and that would have been largely due to Essington Lewis, who ran that.
Essington was.
What was it called? Industrial Mobilisation Scheme. Or
I think what the aeroplane factory called it. It's still there, it's still going strong.
So we've got a couple of answers. What else?
I've been reading about the history of the school, of Melbourne University and the School of Engineering there. And I was reading about the war, and it was saying that at the onset of the war, they took... The government took one of the buildings of the university and used it as an engineering building and used it as the Department of Munitions and were making guns and got the engineers involved. And I was quite fascinated to read it, and I was wondering if you were around at all in that stage.
I was involved with munitions.
Yeah.
I was more involved in setting up the factories that contained them.
Right.
That involvement was with what is now that big building, the workshop building.
Yeah.
You know, realise that? That workshop building was taken over.
Is that the one?
Mm. And they made a lot of gun sights, optical gun sights. The people in the physics department, there was a reader in physics who was very good on optics. And they produced gun sights for field guns, but also for aircraft.
Mm.
And they were very good gun sights.
Yeah. When I was in America towards the end of the war, I was travelling with two other ICI people, and at that time the atomic bomb was being assembled, and everyone thought that that's what we were doing. We were involved in that, but we weren't.
Mm.
But we used to say, pass it up by saying, no, that's where they take the front ends of horses for final assembly. That was the... Everyone used that expression, so you were no wiser when...
What was the union building like then? Was the student union active? Were you active in student affairs?
Well, I was living in college, and you didn't need the union so much as the other students did.
And you enjoyed college life?
Oh, wonderful. Auburn was very good.
Mm.
Ian McLennan was in there before me. Weary Dunlop.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things about college life was the supper parties. They took life very seriously because we're during the Depression. And after dinner, we'd gather around the piano and have a few songs. Graham Thurkell used to play the piano. He could play anything, you know.
Mm.
We had a wonderful experience there. Then we'd go off and study until about 10:30. And then you'd go along to a supper party, either in your study or one or the other. We used to go to Weary Dunlop's quite often, and Sol Green, who was my wife in Ormond, he went to Shell and did very well in Shell. You probably haven't struck it.
Did you have engineering tutors in Ormond that
time?
Where did they come from?
Oh, they were they're more in individual subjects, mathematics.
Were they people from the university or they?
No, people who'd graduated from the university.
So that put you in touch with some of the alumni who'd been through the system.
Yeah. I remember at one of the supper parties, Weary Dunlop, who was always the butt of jokes because he could concentrate on any subject he wanted. And in engineering, we did some of those where we involved painting a drawing, and we had our paint water, which was watercolours, and the paint water just looked like cold tea. And Weary was batting along with one of his stories, and we poured him a cup of cold tea, put him in a hot water, and he drank this off. We might have poisoned him. He drank a whole lot of it, didn't notice.
No.
Everyone said afterwards, just showed how rotten that tea was. But that he had the most wonderful powers of concentration.
And what were some of your other favourite moments at the university?
You rode, didn't you?
It
was success?
Yes, I rode for Ormond, which we won 2 years. And I rode for university for 4 years, and then in the post-university crew, which won the Victorian Championship. So we didn't do too badly.
What position did you row?
4, 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. 4, 5, 6 and 7.
In the engine room of the boat?
Mm-hmm.
In the engine room?
And I had the facility change from bow to stroke, which was quite a help. An old friend of mine, death notices in the paper today.
I haven't read the paper today.
From Mount Isa. Shows where mine is not as good as it used to be. Anyway, his death notices in the paper. He was managing director of Mount Isa for years. Is it Melbourne? I think he's a Melbourne graduate.
I haven't checked the paper today. Must do that. You've had experience all around Australia, then, haven't you? I know you enjoy far north Queensland.
Yeah, we've got the farm there. It's a wonderful farm. It's just so beautiful and so productive.
Whereabouts is it?
It's there near Mackay.
Inland from Mackay?
Yeah. If you look, you'll see some of the cattle on it there.
Mm. Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful country.
Oh, it's a lovely country. It's soft, rolling countryside.
And
rainfall guaranteed. We've had it now. Top of Swanson and I, my old friend, we decided that when we finished from ICI that life had been good to us and we'd like to do put something back into it. And we bought this property and it's never looked back 40 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
How many
my son, Gordon, he absolutely adores it. All his family, they're heading up there now. All his sons and their wives. And
how many cattle would you run there?
We run about 4,000.
That's not big, though.
It's quite big. It's small by Queensland standards.
Yeah, a lot of those have become, a bit smaller, perhaps. There have been some big spreads around the Northern Territory and the Kimberley.
Yeah, and we're growing sugar. Probably about 20,000 tons of cattle.
So you're well mechanised there.
Yeah. It's a glorious place. I'm sorry that I'm so old now that I can't travel anymore. Mm. I can't get up there, but Gordon absolutely adores it.
Mm, that's great.
And he's learned to be a very good farmer, apart from make films.
He's a filmmaker?
Yeah.
What films has he made?
Well, he does a lot with the ABC, one of the films he made was about Howard Florey, and he always felt that Howard Florey was done down by Fleming.
Yeah.
And he made this film to show in what way that happened.
I think I saw that, yeah.
Did you see the film?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. We've probably got records of the university somewhere.
Right.
Well, Archie, I hope we haven't tired you. You look as if you're enjoying it.
Oh, I do enjoy it. Life's been pleasant.
Yes, I think I've been lucky too. Candace, have you got any?
I don't, no.
If we think of any other questions, we'll ring you up. Okay, well, thank you for all that.
You want a copy? You can take that book with you.
Oh, thank you. We'll send it back.
Oh, no, you can have that. You can have that one.
You'll have to sign it. My wife was very taken by that book you recommended on Queensland, In Case I Die.
Oh, yes.
And she went around and found a copy. She'd known, she always likes to get the author to sign it. But I know you weren't the author, but I think she'd like you to sign that if we get the chance. It'll go into the university archives, of course.
Yeah, no, that's great.
And
we have one at the university library.
Have we? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
As well, so.
Well, that'll be... Now, that was... Right. We ought to try and get a copy of that.
Excellent.
It goes off when you get older.
I'm getting some
writing
arthritis in my wrist, and I used to be able to print very well like a draftsman, but it's hopeless now. Just because I fell over and broke it a few years ago and didn't get it properly fixed. Well, thank you. That's very legible. The other thing that I admired was your Cayley up there.
Oh, it's a lovely mix of that, isn't it?
Isn't that a magnificent painting? How long have you had that?
I bought it from old, what's his name? He was honoured by all the universities because he was a great connoisseur of painting. What's his name? I forget my name. He died just recently. Mm.
He was what? He was a gallery man, wasn't he?
No, he was. He had his own academy.
But you're interested in birds.
Yeah.
I take an interest in them, but I looked at that and I thought, what a magnificent painting! I went over and I saw Cayley in the corner. Beautiful. Well, Archie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And see the little boy up there in the...
Yeah. Which one? The one smiling or the one being fed?
The one nearest you.
Yep.
Near the front.
Yep.
That's my little great-grandson in New York.
Oh, New York.
Yeah.
And you had an engagement party recently. Last, when we were going to come and see you before, you had this engagement party, which... That was what, your son or daughter, granddaughter?
Nephew.
Mm-hmm. Nephew.
Your nephew had a... Just recently we were going to see you and your nephew had an engagement, was it?
Yes, it was...